With virtually limitless design options, Pella is like your personal barista for windows and doors. Customize your order by August 31st and you can bundle and save big at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Get started today at PellaWI.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Come join the conversation on the Old National Bank talk and text line at 855-616-1620. Old National Bank. Get old. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome to the show. So glad to have you with us, no matter how you find us, whether it's over on the air radio, whether you're listening on our stream for the last month or so. We also are, you can watch us. You can watch us do spoken word radio. We have our very own WTMJ YouTube channel, and I know a number of you watch. You can also go to WTMJ.com. You have that listen live button that you can click, and a lot of people do that. You can also click the watch live button and watch us do the shows and see how my wife has dressed me on any given day. That's one of the things that we offer. So we're very glad to have you with us. Hey, just at the start of the show, want to just recognize something we did last night so I make sure I do not forget about it. My very dear friends who I know through my wife, Fran, Maggie and Dale, today is their 50th wedding anniversary. 50 years married to each other. And so we had a big party for them at the house last night, and it was just a wonderful time. And just 50 years, that's just something. I think it's for when you look at what happens to so many marriages over the years, and you look at whatever the divorce rate is in this country and stuff, 50 years, just an incredible, incredible accomplishment. Okay, let's get started. Our number, 855-616-1620. If you are a regular listener to this program, you know that I am not a smoker. Years and years ago, I would have an occasional cigar, and I stopped doing that a number of years ago. But I've never been a cigarette smoker, just never. And while I am not judgmental about this, I've never understood it because, you know, ever since I was a kid, you knew it was very, very clear that smoking was bad for you and that smoking was expensive. And so I just never got started, never got into the habit. And so I've never been a smoker. I admit that I do not understand why anybody starts smoking in today's day and age, because we know it's not good for you. It is expensive. And yet I'm always amazed in the middle of winter here, you'll be walking into a bar or a restaurant and you'll see a bunch of people, including lots of young people who are huddled outside in 10-degree weather having a cigarette. You want to say, knowing what you know, why did you start smoking? But again, that's an individual decision. Well, we also know that smoking isn't good for you because of a number of things that have happened. It used to be, when I was a kid, they used to have, you could advertise cigarettes on television. And that was a huge advertising source. You know, you had the Marlboro man and you have the commercials of some big healthy guy sitting on a horse smoking a Marlboro. You'd hear ads for Virginia Slims. I remember that. You've come a long way, baby. You know, that was one of the big taglines, you know, and women who had their now own brand of cigarettes. At least that's how they were trying to, you know, market these. It was a huge amount of revenue. And then ultimately, because cigarette smoking isn't good for you, what happened is cigarette smoking, you could no longer advertise it on television. Plus, you have the warnings. If you look at an ad, for example, for cigarettes in the print medium, it's got to have prominently displayed a warning that says the Surgeon General tells you that cigarettes are bad for you. If you buy a pack of cigarettes, there's a big warning label on the side of the pack that tells you cigarette smoking is bad for you. And sometimes it graphically goes into how bad it is. Well, if you are a smoker in Canada, the warnings are about to change. Get this. Canada is in the process of requiring health warnings, not just on a pack of cigarettes, but soon in Canada, they will be the first country in the world to require manufacturers to print warnings directly on individual cigarettes. Beginning next year, cigarettes sold in Canada will bear one of six messages, both in English and in French. The messages will include tobacco harms children, poison in every puff, smoking causes impotence, ooh, This is what they're doing. So it's these labels will be required on king size cigarettes by April 30th of 2024, and on all regular and other cigarettes by January 1st of 2025. They estimate that around 48,000 people in Canada die as a result of tobacco use each year. So what they're doing is they're making the warnings absolutely and totally unavoidable. So every cigarette will, on its, on the label, it will have one of these six warnings. So every time you go to bring out a cigarette out of the pack of cigarettes, it is going to be inescapable. You will look at this warning that tells you that cigarette smoking is bad for you. Our number, 855-616-1620. That's the Old National Bank talk and text line. I guess I have two questions that are related to each other. Question number one is, should we do this in the United States? And I guess related question, question two is this going to make any difference? Will the fact that now, in addition to the warning label on the package, which is apparently not stopping people from either stopping to smoke or from continuing to smoke, will warnings on each individual cigarette, will that make a difference? Or is this, no pun intended, overkill? 855-616-1620. We discuss in just a moment. What do you think? Okay, here are the numbers. In the United States, they currently estimate that about 28.3 million adults currently smoke cigarettes. That is down. In 2005, it was about 21%. About one in five Americans smoked. Now, the most recent numbers I have are from 2 years ago. It's down to 11.5%. So it's essentially gone from 21 out of 100 to 12 out of 100. That's similar to what's going on in Canada. Let's see. In 2001, they estimated that there were about 22% of the population that smoked. Now it's down to 13%. So Canada has had what I would argue is roughly a proportional sort of drop. Canada has been very, very aggressive. And if you're just tuning in, starting next year, the warnings, cigarette smoking is going to kill you. It's going to cause impotence. That's one of the warnings that they put on there. It's going to be in both English and French, and it's going to be printed on every single cigarette. Is this going to make a difference? And should we look at doing something like this in the United States? One of our texters says, Jeff, this is a dumb thing. If you don't read the warning on the pack of cigarettes, you're not going to read the one on the cigarettes itself. 855-616-1620. Jeff, I think by the time someone's holding a cigarette, he or she has already made a decision to smoke. I think it's better to focus on the benefits of not smoking, health, money, and somehow try to communicate that to the smoker before he or she buys the pack. All right, let's start with Mike in Illinois. Mike, you're first. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. What do you think?
So right before the break, you asked if it was overkill and it would make a difference. I think it is overkill, and that's why it's going to make a difference. Certainly there's people, especially young people, that will kind of do it even more so because of those warnings and laugh at it. But for people that have been doing it for a while, I think the message will, get through more. I remember, this is a while ago, I was in Ireland in 95, and they had warnings prominently displayed on the packs with skull crossbones,
right,
saying, this will kill you. And, I mean, I smoked, for a little while in my 20s, but if I would have seen that, I mean, I don't think I would have taken it seriously. Now, I guess it depends, how prominent the messages are on the cigarettes, if, they can be well seen. The one texter had a point, like, obviously, if he's got it in his hand. But I just think, repetition is one way to learn things. And if you keep seeing that over and over again, it might get through faster.
Thanks for the call, Mike. I appreciate it. 855-616-1620. I would be particularly interested in hearing from some of you people who are, in fact, smokers. If the warning labels were put on the cigarettes themselves, do you think it would encourage you to perhaps quit? Or perhaps would have encouraged you to not start smoking in the first place. And I guess, again, color me skeptical on this. I look at this stuff, and if you ask me, Jeff, is this going to hurt? Does it hurt anything? My answer would probably be no. On the other hand, I wonder whether this is virtue signaling, because the decision, I mean, for example, I don't think there's anybody out there nowadays who makes the decision to start smoking thinking that this is going to be something that's good for them. My gosh, you know, you're bombarded with all the different warnings and all the different realities that cigarette smoking leads to cancer. It's very, very bad. And yet people decide that they're going to do it anyways. The idea that you're going to print a warning on the cigarette itself, to me, isn't going to change. I don't think it's likely to change the dynamic at all. And for people who are out there who have been smoking for a while and become addicted, and it's very, very addictive, I mean, I know, because again, I've never smoked, but I know people who've given up the habit. They know it's bad for them. And I guess I just don't think that putting that label is really going to do anything. There's reasons why, you know, people can't quit or whatever. It's because of the addiction. 855-616-1620. But I am intrigued. Do you think this would make a difference at all? Jeff, I think the only thing this will do is perhaps raise the cost of cigarettes. Jeff, I think the solution is education on the front end. This is the government overreach, treating citizens who are grown adults and are free to make their choices, treating them like children. This is one of the interesting things that I've always felt about this, because at some point in time, I think we're going to have to, in this country, grapple with the whole question of, are cigarettes so harmful that we're going to make the decision that we're going to try to do a new prohibition and see if we can make that work? I'm not advocating for that, but all this other stuff kind of just like dances around the edges. 855-616-1620, another caller from Illinois, Paul. Paul, good afternoon.
Yeah, hi, Jeff. Nice conversation, as usual.
Thank you, sir.
I don't think it's going to make a difference. You know, down in Illinois here, with the amount of marijuana, cannabis dispensaries opening up and the amount of people smoking more now, I think it's just going to not only make a difference for cigarettes, but I think it's going to feed off of each other. I think in 5 years, you're going to see more smokers because, of again, down here, we got all these cannabis shops opening right up and dispensaries.
Well, it, you know, Paul,
so I don't think it's going to make a difference. I think it's just going to feed off of each other.
Well, Paul, it is interesting because, well, of course, I don't know how people indulge in marijuana nowadays. I think, you know, a lot of it, I am told, is the edibles and it's stuff like that, as opposed to, you know, the old days where you'd roll the joint or you'd put the marijuana in the pipe, or so I'm told. To the extent that people are still smoking it, you are correct. It's much more carcinogenic. It is. But of course, on the other hand, you know, you have people who are smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. Theoretically, even if you're a heavy pothead, you're not going to be smoking 20 joints a day, I don't think, unless you're just flat out never going to get out of mom's basement. I mean, that's just kind of the reality of this. 855-616-1620. Will this make a difference? Tom in Racine. Tom, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Jeff, my point was that in a lot of your poorer neighborhoods, cigarettes are sold individually. You may buy two or three. They're usually like a buck a piece.
Yeah.
And also, when kids are starting, they're not getting a pack of cigarettes. First off, you can't buy them. They're getting one or two, or somebody's giving them one, or they're buying one from one of their buddies. So it may have value in that regard.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah, you're right. They call them, what's the term? Loosies, I think, you know, L-O-O-S-I-E-S, like loosies. You know, that's, I think, the term that's used for like the single cigarette. Do you think, I guess, and this is what I wrestle with, and it's why I said a minute ago, Tom, I guess I don't think it hurts. But at the same time, you've got that 14-year-old kid and somebody gives them the cigarette, or they buy the cigarette for, you know, 50 cents or a quarter or whatever it's going to be. Do you think they're going to stop to read that, or they might? Do you think that they're going to say, "Oh, you know, the government's put this warning label on it here. I'm not going to take it." I guess that's what I'm wrestling with.
Yeah, I think you're right there. However, if you're doing it once or twice, somewhere along the line, you're going to look.
Yeah, maybe. No, thanks for calling. I mean, right? I go back to this thing. Will it hurt? Can it hurt? No. I mean, I don't think it hurts, but I'm not convinced that it's helping. The interesting thing in Canada, and Canada has been, if anything, more aggressively tobacco than the United States has been. They've got like the graphic pictures on the cigarette packs and things like that. We, we don't have that yet in the United States. There's an effort to do it, but it's been blocked by a federal judge. But our percentage of cigarette smoking, the decrease we've had, has mirrored the decrease in Canada. So I think, quite candidly, I think the way you deal with it is it's just more education and things like that. Eric in Menominee Falls. Eric, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing?
Real well, thank you. Will this make a difference?
I don't think it's going to make a difference. I've actually been in Canada as a smoker before, and a couple fun facts. I don't know if it's all of Canada, but they don't sell menthol or flavored cigarettes. So they're pretty heavy on the anti-smoking stuff.
Right. Right.
And then, the warning packs, you can't buy American cigarettes in Canada. I personally, everybody knows smoking's bad for you, you know? I mean, if you want a cigarette, you're going to have one.
Right. Why do you think people start in the first place? That is always one of the most intriguing questions to me. I understand 50 years ago, but nowadays, knowing what we know and knowing how much cigarettes cost, why do you think people start in the beginning, in the first place?
Well, I started when I was 15 because it was cool.
Right.
So, and you get a little buzz, you know what I mean? That little buzz. And then the next thing you know, you're hooked.
Yeah.
And, I've been smoking on and off. I think the longest I quit for was 2 years, but, currently on, I don't know if that's on the wagon or off the wagon, but.
So how long have you been, how long this time have you been on the wagon as far as not smoking cigarettes?
About 2 years.
Okay. Well, Is it hard?
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, as soon as something extremely stressful comes along in your life, the first thing you think is, I could really go for a cigarette right now.
Yeah. No, I get no. Thanks for calling, Eric. I don't have a framework for this, although I have a very, very good friend who was, for a good portion of his life, was a heavy smoker. And, you know, he says, and he quit, my gosh, probably at least 30 years ago, maybe more. But to this day, he says that if he ever was diagnosed with a terminal disease, you know, you've got X number of months to live. There's nothing we can do with you. He says he'd start smoking again. He says because he genuinely misses it. He says, I used to love the idea of after dinner, just sitting back and having a cup of coffee and lighting up a cigarette. He said to this day, I miss it. I understand it was bad for me. I quit because it was the right thing to do, but I just miss it. And to which my comment is, well, I hope you're never diagnosed with a terminal disease. One final text on the smoking, because an interesting one. One of our texters says, Jeff, as to why it is that people smoke cigarettes, many state that they know a man or woman who smoked cigarettes and lived to 92. I'm sure some do. My grandfather died at 71 and my uncle died at 64, both from smoking cigarettes. Yeah, that's the same thing. It's the same argument, and I do get on my soapbox about this, about people who, you know, end up driving without seatbelts on, and how many of these collisions, these accidents, these chases have we talked about just in the last couple months where somebody dies because they were ejected from a car and they weren't wearing a seatbelt. And I know that there's some of you out there who just to this day that make the decision not to wear seatbelts. And look, and I understand because when I started driving years ago, this a lot of people, you had the option of doing it. No. And I've heard all the arguments. No, I don't want to wear the seatbelt. It's too confining or whatever. And inevitably, you always get somebody who will say, well, I know somebody who knew somebody who had a cousin who dated a girl whose brother was in an automobile accident, and if he'd been wearing the seatbelt, he would be dead. And I'm sure there are those anecdotal stories. I'm sure that, you know, you find that unicorn once out of 10,000 times. I'm a numbers guy. I'm a betting guy. I don't want to bet that I'm going to be that one out of 10,000 situation, because the reality is when it comes to seatbelts, cars are a lot safer now, but it all starts with the restraint system, you know, with wearing the shoulder harness and the seatbelt so you're not thrown around the car. That's when the airbags come in and all the other stuff does. But if you're not restrained, boom, you're going through the window. Boom, you're smashing into the steering wheel. And so while I accept the fact that there might be that case, it's the unicorn. The same thing is true with cigarette smoking. I think it's inevitable that you just can't even argue with the fact that it is incredibly bad for you. Now, we all do things, or at least if you're human like I am, most of us do things that are bad for us in one shape or form. Maybe you shouldn't have that extra piece of birthday cake, or, you know, maybe you shouldn't be eating the junk food, or oh my gosh, you know, you're drinking regular soda, or you're drinking diet soda, or how much coffee are you drinking, or having beer? I mean, look, I understand that we all make these choices, and some are worse than others. And as grown-ups, we all get to deal with the cost of that. But for people who would try to make the argument, well, I don't believe that cigarette smoking is bad for you, nah, that one is a very tough sell. Hey, a follow-up on a story that we talked about earlier this week, and it all kind of ties into another recurring theme on this program, which is if you don't have consequences, we shouldn't be surprised if people do the same thing over and over again. And I just it's one of my favorite in a just head shaking way story of the week. The guy's name is Daniel Barton. All right. So here is the deal. A Shorewood police squad car was stolen on Tuesday evening, May 30th. Police say the man arrested had also stolen a Milwaukee police vehicle in December. The Shorewood crime happened near Capitol Drive and Esterbrook around 6 p.m. Tuesday. That is right by where our radio studios used to be. Police say that there was a traffic stop. During a traffic stop, a 34-year-old man identified as, now, Daniel Barton, entered the vehicle and drove off. So they're making a traffic stop, cops out of the car. This guy comes up, jumps in the car, and drives off. The officer then has to call the dispatch saying, somebody just stole my squad car. Now, of course, this raises a whole lot of issues. Like, I mean, I understand intellectually, at least, going out and stealing certain cars. But what in God's green earth are you going to do with a squad car? So anyhow, guy drives off in the squad car. The squad was found abandoned near Capitol and Holton. It was not damaged. Milwaukee police arrested a 34-year-old man named Daniel Barton a short time later. Okay, so the guy jumps in the car. He drives off, stolen a squad car. According to police, and this is the dazzling detail of the story, he was identified as the same person who stole a Milwaukee squad car in December 5th of 2022. So less than 6 months ago. Same thing, during a traffic stop, he jumps in and steals a Milwaukee squad car at Holton and Keefe during a traffic stop. He ditched the car near Richards and Burleigh and ran, but was arrested again. The man, Daniel Barton, was charged with taking driving a vehicle without the owner's consent. So online court records show a warrant was issued for him in February after he failed to show up for court. So the guy steals a Milwaukee police squad car. He is charged, interestingly, and this is the dazzling detail, they charge him with a misdemeanor, a Class A misdemeanor. I can't believe that you can steal a Milwaukee cop car and they only charge you with a misdemeanor. Anyhow, he's charged with a misdemeanor. He doesn't show up for court. In February, they issue a bench warrant for him, but nobody goes out and picks him up. Okay, nobody goes out and picks him up. So he's out. There's an outstanding warrant for him. And he does the same thing last Tuesday, this time in Shorewood. And now they've arrested him again. I don't know how low a bail they're going to let him out on. But again, it's one of these examples of lack of consequences. He steals the first squad car in December. They slap him on the wrist by charging him with a misdemeanor. They let him out. I'm not even sure if there was a cash bail. Don't know that for sure one way or the other. But obviously, it wasn't enough to deter him from doing the same thing a few months later. If you don't have consequences, why should we be surprised that criminals are going to do the same thing over and over and over again? When we come back, all right, just because you can do something, does it mean you should? Stick around. One of our texters makes such an interesting point, because I was thinking the same thing. We were talking about the guy who steals squad cars and has now stolen two, one a Shorewood one earlier this week after stealing a Milwaukee squad car in December. And the question that the texter asks is, Jeff, I'm confused. Does the guy lay in wait for any cop car that might be stolen? And that is, what a great question. And I said, I have no idea. But you would think, I don't know. Do you just kind of walk up and down and saying, okay, well, here's a speed trap or something. I'm just going to sort of walk up and down hoping that I'm going to see a car be pulled over? Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but normally when I see cars that are pulled over, I'm in my car. I mean, I'm not going to pull my car over, get out, steal the squad car, and drive off. How you even do this or go about it is something that I don't understand, and that's probably a good thing. Okay, here's the story. My mom passed away 13 years ago. My dad a couple years after that. I miss my parents to this day. But when they passed away, I was in my 50s, early 50s. And so I had the real blessing. My mom was just a great lady. People who grew up who knew my mom, you know, in the North Shore and stuff. I know every little boy loves their mom, and that's true. And I was certainly one. But I had the benefit for at least a good portion of my life as a teenager, and then as a young adult, and then as an adult. I had the benefit of having my parents in my life, and it was a real blessing. There's just no question about it. Now, a lot of times people don't have that chance because, you know, we never know what's going to happen with life. You have, you know, young people that get sick and die and car crashes and all these things. So there's no guarantee. But just all things being equal, it's just a blessing to have your parents in your life. At least I view that. And I was thinking about this as I saw this story this week. Al Pacino, you know, Al Pacino, Michael and the Godfather, etc. They just announced that he is, at the age of 83, about to have a baby with his 29-year-old girlfriend. He's 83. Robert De Niro, 79. Just had his seventh child with a younger partner as well. Pacino's going to be 83. De Niro is 79. Now, obviously, the biology is something that, yes, you can do this, okay? You know, yes, you know, the male, at some point in time, ladies, you're not going to be able to have babies at 79. That's just kind of the way biology is. But for men, yes, you apparently can still have children when you're 79 or you're 83 or whatever. You can do it. But just because you can do it, does it mean it's the right thing to do? Now, I understand this gets to be kind of a touchy issue, and I understand when you're looking at people like Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, they've got a ton of money, so presumably their child is not going to want for anything. But here's the reality. While no parent is guaranteed a long life, a person who has a child in their 70s or 80s, the reality of life expectancy is you're probably at best, you know, you're going to be around when the kid becomes a teenager. That's at best. And so for most of that child's life, they are going to be without a parent. Our number is 855-616-1620. That's the Old National Bank talk and text line. Is that fair to the kids? And again, I understand that there's no guarantees in life, and you can have, I don't know, somebody who's in their mid-20s who gets diagnosed with some terrible terminal form of cancer and boom, you know, dies at the age of 27, leaving three young children behind. I understand that happens, and that is awful, but that's a different situation, it seems to me, than somebody who is 80 years old, knowingly making the decision that here, I'm going to bring a child into the world. Now, with Al Pacino, it sounds like this might have been a surprise. The reports today are that when she said she was pregnant, he wanted her to take a paternity test because that might have been a surprise. I'm not sure it was with De Niro. But for people, for these guys, even if they're financially in a position to do it, Does it seem like it's the right thing to do to you for people to bring children into the world at 75 or 80 or 85 years old, knowing that, again, when you look at life expectancy, there's a limited amount of time, and in all likelihood, that child is going to spend most of their life without, in this case, their natural father? 855-616-1620, we discuss. And I understand it's also a matter of degree. Let's say you have a guy who's 60 years old, late 50s, early 60s, and he's probably now remarried, younger woman. She wants to have a family. Well, that's okay. You have a child when you're in your early 60s. If you look at lifespans, well, you know, everything being equal, chances are, you know, maybe you're going to be able to live into your 80s. You're at least around when the kid is a teenager and things like that. But these cases, 79, 82, 83 years old to start having babies. Now, again, maybe you're going to beat the mortality table odds, but chances are that you're probably not going to be around by the time, certainly by the time the kid starts driving. And I understand you can leave, you know, your legacy, and you can leave the money and all that sort of stuff. But is that fair? Is it fair to the kids to do that? And I say that appreciating that, you know, all sorts of stuff can happen in life. Let's talk to Sandra in Appleton. Sandra, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm glad I am able to get through to you.
Sure.
Yeah, my father was 68, my mother 45. Not quite as 70 or 80, but still, as the years went by, I'm glad I'm here.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, right.
But my mother had to take care of me, and then he got sick. And so, really, I didn't have a father for a long time. So
yeah, how old was your dad when he passed, if you remember?
72.
Okay, so, I mean, essentially, your dad got sick and passed by the time before you were 5 or 6 years old, essentially. So,
yeah, correct. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And my mother was up there in age 2, not so to speak. Not,
right.
But anyway, those things happen. And I just wanted to call you and let you know what my feelings are about it.
No, thanks. And again, I appreciate it, right? Because thanks for calling, Sandra. I mean, again, I understand if you're glad you're here, but at the same time, you know, that you go through your entire life without your natural father. And look, and I understand people get divorced. I understand, you know, some people go through their whole life without knowing who their father was. I get that all that's happening. But, you know, I guess I wrestle with this decision that older men make to say, okay, at the age of 80, I want to have more children just because I can. And I think, you know, that's sort of the issue there. You know, is it selfish? You know, Jeff, besides leaving a child potentially fatherless at a very young age, you won't be much involved in a lot of activities as well. Yes, I understand that reading to your child, et cetera, is fine. But how about playing soccer with them, et cetera? I think that, you know, you could fairly use the word, you know, selfish. Jeff, I always say here's an interesting text. I always say that with age comes wisdom. There are exceptions to this rule. These older men becoming fathers, I think, show a lack of wisdom. I think it's more of a pride issue. Look at me. I'm an old man having babies. Very sad, in my opinion. They should be thinking of these children coming into the world who are going to be raised without having a father around. Again, you can do it. And I understand, and I'm sure there's all these things that, you know, work out really well. And I appreciate that it's not like, you know, Robert De Niro's seventh child or Al Pacino's, you know, fifth child. It's not like they're going to be financially neglected or things like that. It's just, I don't know. You just know that one of the parents in all likelihood isn't going to be around for all those different important events. And I guess that's the question. Is it selfish to do that? All right, we got a lot of great stuff coming up in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, including it's another reason why people are going to Amazon. I'll explain and we'll discuss. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome back to the show. Hey, If you follow me on Twitter, it's at JeffWagner620. This could be a very, very profitable, you know, like 30 to 60 seconds. I've got a link to a story. The Wisconsin Department of Revenue, they are in the middle of their annual unclaimed property awareness campaign, and they've just come out with their new list of people who have, in the state of Wisconsin, have cash or other property waiting to be claimed. A lot of times this will be like tax refunds that you might be entitled to that, you know, you never found out about or you never claimed, or maybe delinquent, I think, bank accounts or things like that. Anyhow, the Department of Revenue currently has $600 million in unclaimed property, $600 million that they want to give to the rightful owners. And they've got the Department of Revenue has this search page, and I've got a link to that. So if you follow me on Twitter, it's at JeffWagner620. Got this posting. It's actually a Fox 6 story that will take you to the website, the DOR Unclaimed Property search page. You put in your full name, and then you hit search, and then it'll list all those people with your name that have money coming back, and then it'll unclaim property. And then what you do is you have to, you know, match it up to your address and stuff. I just throw that out there because, I mean, I did it this morning. I thought, okay, let's see. Now, unfortunately, you know, or maybe fortunately, there's no unclaimed property sitting around for me, but maybe for you. So if you want to get a link to this, again, you can follow me on Twitter. It's at JeffWagner620. Got a link to the Department of Revenue's unclaimed property search page. So, you know, go figure with that. This is a story, and Connie was referring to it. This is a story that I admit just kind of hacks me off. And when they catch the person who did this, I hope that this is a situation where the case doesn't get John Chismed. You know, it goes to the district attorney's office, and then just kind of we get the Chism effect that we'll charge somebody with a misdemeanor, and then we'll let them out on a stupid low bail to do stuff again. You know, here's what happened. A sheriff's deputy was injured this morning. What happened is down at the North Point parking lot, if you're familiar with Lincoln Memorial Drive, down on the lakefront, there's the parking lot kind of right by Bradford Beach, you know, right in the middle there where you've got like the hamburger stand and things like that. So apparently what happened is they've got cameras down there, and this is sort of interesting. They've got what they call flock license plate recognition cameras. So they're checking license plates of cars that are there, and they find out that there is a stolen vehicle that's in the parking lot. Okay, so the sheriff's deputies, and that's patrolled by the sheriff's department as opposed to the police department. So the sheriff's deputies respond to the fact that there's a stolen car in the North Point parking lot. So what happens is they get there, and a sheriff's deputy, it's a female sheriff's deputy, apparently she goes up to the car, and you've got the guy who's in the stolen car. She goes up to it to conduct an investigation. And as she is at the window, the guy takes off during this stop, dragging her after him. You know, it's like she gets caught on it or whatever. She gets knocked over and dragged. Now, the good news is that she wasn't seriously injured when the guy driving the stolen car fled. But she was knocked down and suffered bruises and scrapes. But it could have been a lot worse. But the fact that it could have been a lot worse doesn't change the dynamic. So right now, the police are looking for the driver and the stolen car. And my guess is got a pretty good description. And I would imagine that under these circumstances, they're going to end up catching the person. He also apparently banged into a pickup truck that was parked there as well. But at this point in time, in the process of fleeing, the point is he hurt the sheriff's deputy. So when they catch him, and I'm pretty confident this will be a when they catch him, like I say, I hope this isn't a case where we see another where the matter gets chismed and, you know, here, you know, we're not going to issue significant charges and we're going to let him out on stupid low bail. This is something where somebody was willing to flee from a sheriff's deputy who was essentially hanging onto the side of the car, didn't care whether that deputy was injured or not. That tells you a lot. And if you don't get the guy that did this off the streets and punish him for this, you know there's going to be another time, and that next time somebody else might end up dead. So you can always check that out. All right. Here is the story. I love to support local businesses. I do. At the same time, I wrestle with the fact that I am a creature of convenience. And I admit that there's a factor of just being easy. I love books. My wife just kind of rolls her head as we're getting like books. She said, "When are you going to have time to read all these books?" I said, "That's okay. It's not like I'm buying heroin. I'm buying books. I mean, it's great. There will be a time that I can sit and read." But just a little while ago, earlier this morning, I was looking and I was seeing that the TV show Justified with Timothy Olyphant that ran for several years, it's been off the air for about 8 years, they're bringing it back. And it was based on a character written by the late mystery novelist Elmore Leonard. And they're bringing it back. It's going to start airing in July. And it's going to be based on an Elmore Leonard book called City Primeval, which is a book about – it's a mystery about something that happens in Detroit. And so what they're going to do is they're going to take the character from Justified and they're going to, you know, plop him into Detroit. So it's not fully, you know, tied into the novel. But I thought, hey, this sounds like an interesting book. So, you know, it's 2012. I could have, I guess, sometime this weekend in spare time that I don't have, I could have perhaps gone to some of these bookstores to see if they have this 2012 Elmore Leonard book, you know, that I'm kind of interested in paperback. But, I mean, that's just too much work. I confess to that. So what I do is I go to my Amazon account. Yes, they can have it delivered by tomorrow at noon. They could have had it delivered sooner if I wanted it, but tomorrow at noon is fine. I order the book and the book will show up on my doorstep and then I'm going to have it to read whenever I want. So a lot of these brick and mortar stores are fighting the issue of convenience. It's getting worse. Don't know if you saw this story. We've talked in the past about out-of-control shoplifting and the fact that you have a number of stores that are closing because they're getting hit. The term they use in the industry is shrinkage, but it means shoplifting. You had the Walmart on 124th and what Capitol or whatever that ended up closing. And while they don't come out and say it fully, it's because there was just so much shoplifting that it just no longer got profitable. Well, rather than closing, some retailers are starting to say, okay, well, here's the deal with – this is how we're going to have to do business. So I'm looking at a story about Walgreens, and these are Walgreens in Chicago. There are a number of Walgreens in Chicago that have been temporarily closed. They are now reopening. But you're not going to, in general, be able to walk into the Walgreens and walk up and down the aisles taking stuff. What's going to happen is you will be unable to shop for yourself at most of the store. The only exception is going to be two small aisles of what they call essentials. And those essentials, they're going to be open for shopping, but they're going to be monitored by employees. And the shelving only goes up 5 feet tall, so the employees who are in these aisles for the essentials, they can monitor what's going on. For all the other items, except for these two small aisles of essentials, here's what you have to do. You have to go in. Everything is locked up. You have to use a kiosk station to digitally select the items you want. So you go through and you say, okay, I want razor blades, boom. I want AAA batteries, boom. You use this kiosk section as you go through the store. And I don't know if you're assigned a number or how this works out, but what you do is you punch all these different buttons as you go shopping. And then at the end of, then you go up to the counter to pay and somebody has apparently gone around and collected all the stuff that you have ordered. So in theory, when you get up to the counter to pay, the stuff that you have ordered has been collected. Now, how you do this as a practical matter is a little bit beyond me because these retail stores don't have enough people to begin with. So, you know, every time you've got a shopper in there, somebody's going to be, okay, we've got orders for this and that and the other thing. But the bottom line is you're not going to be able to walk up and down aisles and pick out what you want with the exception of these two small little aisles that are there. In addition, you're not even going to be in a situation where they've got something that's under lock and key, so you can try to find an employee who will open it up and give it to you, and then you take it up there. All your shopping is going to have to be done through this digital thing where you can't feel it, you can't touch it. All you can do is simply say, I want it. You hit this button, and hopefully it's going to be waiting for you. Our number is 855-616-1620. That is the old National Bank talk and text line. Is this going to work? And I guess, look, to me, I'm not a shopper. I'm a buyer. And it's hard enough to get me to go into stores to buy stuff. But sometimes, hey, all right, if I need toothpaste, I need whatever, I'm going to run into the Walgreens that's across the street from where I live, and I'm going to grab a couple things, and I'm going to be out. If now I have to walk through the stores, pick stuff out, hit the button, wait for it to get delivered to the front when I'm done shopping, I'm sorry. I just don't want to work that hard, and I don't think most people do. 855-616-1620. We discuss. Hey, here's a success story. I mentioned that my Twitter posting with a link to the Department of Revenue's unclaimed website. Three texters all said they've collected dough. They went there, and now, doesn't sound like it's a lot of dough, but three texters said, hey, thanks for this. I just found out that I have $45. That's one. $45 coming back to me. Okay. You are $45 wealthier because you listened to the Wagner Show this afternoon. You just can't beat that, right? So again, if you want to just check it out, it's kind of a fun thing. I did it this morning too. I didn't expect to do it. All right. 855-616-1620. This, I'm afraid this is the trend of the future. What Walgreens has done in Chicago is in a couple of what I'm going to call the high crime sort of areas, they're with a very, very limited exception, you can no longer walk the aisles and pick out goods. You have to, it's all digital. You go in, they've got digital kiosks, and I don't exactly understand how it works, but you go up and down the aisles and you say, okay, I want six tubes of Colgate toothpaste, and I want two things of mouthwash, and I want three things of deodorant, and you push these orders in, and somebody goes and collects it for you, and then it's waiting for you when you get to, or you wait for it when you get up there to check out. It's got to delay the shopping process. It's kind of like, On a big level, though, if you've ever lived in a state where they have the state liquor stores, and at a lot of the state liquor stores, you can't just walk up and down the aisles and look at stuff. You have to go in, and they've got all the different stuff that's listed, and then what you have to do is you have to say, okay, I want a bottle of this, and you give the list to the guy, and the guy goes gets it for you. It's like that. I think this is going to kill in-store shopping. Let's start with Jim in Milwaukee. Jim, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Way sure. Too time consuming.
Yep.
If I'm going to run in and out for something, you know, I'm not going to go through all of this for a tube of toothpaste, package right. of razors, Band-Aids, whatever. I mean, I hate shopping anyway, yeah. unless it's like a Home Depot or something.
Yeah.
But I cannot, just the mundane things that you need day to day.
Right.
Amazon's going to love this.
Oh, yeah, because we're not going to do it.
Online shopping.
Yeah,
yes,
no, thank
you. I refuse to do it.
Right. I mean, just
I don't like doing it now.
Well, right. And just describing it. I mean, this is my personal idea of hell. You know, the idea that, okay, I'm going to go through, instead of just being able to run in, I need to run in and get some cold pills, okay, whatever. And maybe when I'm in there, I'll pick up something else. Well, here, now I'm not going to be able to buy the over-the-counter cold pills. I'm going to have to register and hit this and hit that and then wait and hope it's there. It ain't going to happen. No, thanks for the call. Jeff, I'm a former Target employee. There were times when I was the only employee on the floor besides whoever was in electronics. And I work nights and weekends when it's very busy. Picture a Saturday with lots of people in the store. I just don't see this working. And you're going to have the registers backed up with people just waiting around for items to be unlocked and brought up. The physical, how you physically do it is just absolutely beyond me. And, you know, maybe you're going to have some people who just say, okay, well, I'm going to stand around. I'm going to wait for my toothpaste. I'm going to wait for the deodorant to come up. But I think for more and more people, it's just going to be another excuse to say, okay, I know what brand I want. Here, I need some shaving cream. I need some Irish Spring soap. I want some toothpaste. boom, I'm going to go to Amazon. I'm going to be able to get a competitive price, and they're going to deliver it to me tomorrow. Now, I'm not going to get it tonight, but I'm going to get it tomorrow. And for most of us, that's going to be soon enough. Can you imagine this? And look, I'm not faulting the stores necessarily, because this is like their Hail Mary. This is their desperate attempt to try to stay open, because they're being robbed from so much. So what does this really tell you? Well, maybe, just maybe, we need to crack down on the thieves, right? If there wasn't so many people getting away with stealing so much, the rest of us and the retailers wouldn't have to be punished in this fashion. Dan in Kenosha. Dan, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I agree. These are commodities, and especially if it's a store you frequent, you know exactly where to go, and you're in and out. So when you think of an analogy with when you go to the airport and you print your own baggage tags, I'm just now getting to where it's kind of routine,
right?
Not really surprises, but, I mean, I go to a rental car counter and they say, use the kiosk, and I'm ready to throw it, you know, in the parking lot.
Right.
Because
right.
You need to talk to a person. So,
well, right. But to your point, Dan, also, okay. So when you're at the airport and you're printing your baggage tags, at least it's one transaction. You know, you put in your confirmation number, and boom, you get it, and you put your bag tags around. Can you imagine that, you know, you're in a Walgreens or a Target or a retailer, and you're buying 10 or 15 things, you know, and you have to do this like every time you want to make a purchase? It's not going to happen.
So many key punches, right. And then I very much plan. I do all the grocery shopping, but even the best laid plans, it's fluid. It's adjusting, and I'm not going to do that in front of a kiosk. So.
Yeah, right. No, I'm with. No, thanks for calling. I'm not criticizing, and I want to be clear here. I'm not criticizing the retailer for this particular decision. They don't have any choice. They're trying to figure out a way to stay afloat, and they're getting robbed so much and stolen from so much that this is what they have to do. And so everybody has to suffer. So maybe let's bring it around to where we started this half hour with consequences. You know, why do we have a system that allows people to steal from stores with impunity and get away from and avoid any significant consequences? So the result is, everybody else has to suffer. Or in my particular, my argument is, I just think a lot of people aren't going to flat out do it. They're going to look for alternatives, period. All right, now here is a good way to end the week. Charlie, you might not have to work till you're 90 years old. Stock market up big today, like Connie was talking about. Let me pull the most recent numbers. Kind of hit refresh here. The Dow Jones Industrial, and it's actually been a pretty decent week. Yesterday, the numbers were up pretty big. Today, the Dow Jones is up 2.17%. That translates into over 700 points. The NASDAQ, which is mostly tech stocks, that's up over 1%, which translates into it's up 143 points. The S&P 500 is up 1.5%. That is a big number as well. That's up 64 points. What is going on is there's two things that happened. First of all, the jobs report came in this morning, and it showed that hiring was up 339,000 new jobs were created in May. And so I think a lot of people were afraid that we were heading into a recession, and we still might be looking at that. But the strong hiring, I think, convinced a lot of people that, no, maybe, you know, employers are still hiring people and stuff. Maybe we're going to avoid a recession. The other thing that's going on, has been going on for the last day or two, is that you did have this compromise agreement where the United States was able to raise the debt ceiling and avoid default. And if you've been listening over the last couple of days, I always make the point that politics is the art of the possible. And the truth is, we have divided government. You have a Democrat who is the president. You have the Senate, which is controlled by Democrats. You have the House of Representatives, which is narrowly controlled by Republicans. And so as a result, there needs to be compromise. Joe Biden originally said he wasn't going to go negotiate at all on this debt ceiling thing. But at the same time, that was never serious because you can't allow the U.S. government to default. You can't allow the government to not be able to borrow enough to meet its obligations. At the same time, I appreciate also that the reason we are in this mess with regard to debt is because we just spend in a way that would be an embarrassment to drunken sailors. So I get the fact that you have Republicans who want to, all right, yes, we'll raise the debt ceiling, but only if we get substantial cuts. You have Democrats who want to increase taxes. Let's tax and spend more. And there's always going to be this tension there. Well, in exchange for raising the debt ceiling, Republicans got a number of, I think, significant concessions. Did they get everything they wanted? No, of course not. But that was never going to happen. But they got a lot of stuff that I think is going to be valuable. Should it have been more? Fine. Yeah, that's an argument. That's an argument you have when this issue comes up again in early 2025 after the next round of elections. But this, does it kick the cat down the road a little bit? Yes, it does. I understand that. But the alternative is to say, okay, we're going to go to the brink and we're not going to sign off on this deal and we're going to let the country not be able to pay its obligations, something which I think is just unthinkable. And so you had broad bipartisan support for this in the House of Representatives. You had five Republicans from Wisconsin who voted in favor of it. You have the two Democrats, Pocan out of Madison and Gwen, I'll have another lobster more. They voted no. So they bailed on Biden to vote no. Ron Johnson voted no in the Senate. Bottom line is there was enough of a middle ground to get this thing done. Is it perfect? No. But it's definitely one of the reasons why the stock market is up big right now together with the report. And I think that is a very good thing. Okay. One of the big economic stories, as long as we were talking about retailers, one of the things that's gone on over the last month or two has been, I don't know if it's the revenge of the anti-woke shoppers or however you want to talk about it. What, a month or two ago, Bud Light, for reasons that to me continue to escape understanding, decided that, well, you know, we don't like the fact that we've got all these old rednecks who are drinking our product. So what we want to do is we want to reach out to a new generation. I get that. So what we're going to do is we're going to, you know, create this promotion with transgender influencer Dylan Mulvaney. And, you know, we're going to send him, you know, pictures of her, I guess, her. We're going to send her pictures of herself on this beer can. And, you know, we're going to hope that she talks about our product. Well, I mean, it worked, but what they did is they alienated a lot of the hardcore Bud Light drinkers. Now, you can argue that this shouldn't have happened, but it did. And Bud Light did not anticipate this. And as a result, well, just to give you an idea, let me just pull out the most current numbers I have. Sales of Bud Light are down 30% year to year. This issue with Budweiser is not going away. Anheuser-Busch InBev, the company that owns Bud Light, et cetera, their stock is down over 16% in just the last month. I mean, it's going down and it's not stopping. In contrast, like the S&P 500 is up about 10%. So Budweiser, the stock, the company that owns it, is going down. Target now finds itself in the same sort of situation. This is, of course, June. June is Pride Month. Target comes out with all sorts of Pride-related themes, which is all well and good. It creates a backlash among some Pride shoppers. And then Target, once they put out the merchandise, then they get the backlash, and their response is, okay, well, we're going to now move some of the stuff that we've had in some of our stores. You know, we're going to bury it in the back, or we're going to pull it off the shelves. So first you antagonize the customers who don't like the fact that you've got the Pride stuff there. Then you antagonize the people who support that because now you've moved it. So you've managed to alienate just about everybody on both sides of the issue. The Target stock for the month of May is down almost 20%. And again, it's a backlash. Now the Target's getting whipsawed because, like I say, you've got the people who didn't like the merchandise choice to begin with, and then you've got the people who are upset that Target, quote unquote, you know, gave in to some of the people who didn't like the merchandise choice in the first place. So, you know, regardless, so now you've alienated people on both sides of the issue. Bud Light, I don't know if they've alienated people on both sides of the issue, but they're in a situation where, you know, people, it's a, I don't know if it's fair to say a boycott, but people are making a decision that, hey, you know, we're not going to buy Bud Light. I saw for Memorial Day last week, in some places, they had a special. And it essentially, you could get like a 15-pack of Bud Light for free, because what they would do is you had a coupon that would give you $15 back on the purchase. And the 12-packs and the 15-packs didn't cost $15. Or if they did, they cost slightly more. You could get it for almost free, but that's what they were trying to do to get customers back. I am not so much interested in how this developed. Was it right to use the transgender influencer or not? Or, you know, was Target right to, you know, put the Pride stuff in the front of the store? Those are decisions that they made. I think they're surprised at the backlash and then surprised at the backlash to their response to the backlash. But to me, the interesting thing is, as we sit here on June 2nd, what do they need to do moving forward? Our number is 855-616-1620. That's the old National Bank talk and text line. If you are Budweiser and Bud Light is a big brand, what do you do to reverse this trend? If you are Target and you're saying, okay, my gosh, our stock is down 20%. We continue to be in the news. We now suddenly find ourselves in the middle of this gender-based, you know, sexual orientation-based controversy, when all we really want to do is we want to sell stuff to people. that's our business. We want to sell Bud Light. We want you to come into Target and buy clothes here. We don't want to be in the middle of this. We don't want to be alienating anybody. What do you do if you're Target, if you're Bud Light? How do you dig yourself out of this hole that you find yourself in? 855-616-1620. We discuss in a moment. There's an interesting story on Fox News about how a lot of the people who actually, the rank and file workers at Target, are extremely upset with their management. Now Target is a very liberal company who's had very liberal policies over the years. But they're like, hey, we're the ones that are on the front line of this stuff, and we don't get to be the decision makers, and none of us saw anything coming. So now we're in the middle of this because, again, you have the one group of customers who comes in and they're upset that there's all the Pride stuff that's in the front. Then you got the other group of customers who then come in and they're upset that the Pride stuff that was in the front has now been moved into the bank or back or pulled from the aisles. And it's the poor employees who are in the middle of all this. But I guess my question is, moving forward, their Target or Bud Light or any of these other companies that find themselves caught up in the backlash, what understanding that at the end of the day, your goal, if you're Budweiser, your goal is to sell beer. If you're Target, your goal is to sell the stuff that Target sells, and you want to sell to the LGBTQ community, and you want to sell to people who don't identify with the you want the color to be green. What do you do now that you find yourself in this mess? 855-616-1620. How do you deal with this? Let's talk to Joe in Appleton. Joe, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for taking the call. Great topic. Really appreciate it. So obviously, we have a number of companies going through this, but my comment specifically is in regards to Bud Light and my idea on how they might recover. So I think the most logical path for them would be to take the Bud Light can and dress it up like a Miller Lite and then just claim it's a Miller Lite.
just try to pass it off as Miller Lite. Hey, well, no, I think The thing to me is I'm surprised that Bud Light didn't see this coming. I think what they're doing now, stuff blows over. That's the truth of it. From the perspective of Bud Light, what you're seeing now is you're seeing a lot of the advertising and the emphasis. It's moving away from the social issues. Again, I don't care where you are on the social issue thing, but now it's more like, okay, we're sending money, we're supporting veterans groups. You know, we're getting away from this. The advertising, we're going to come out with the military cans and things like that and just hope to weather this storm, which my sense is yes, although I will tell you, I'm not a Bud Light drinker. I mean, when I'm drinking light beer, I'm drinking Miller Lite for a variety of reasons. But I mean, I have a number of friends who are dyed in the wool. I've told this story before, dyed in the wool Bud Light drinkers, and they're still drinking Bud Light because they like it better than the other forms of light beer. But at the same time, and I probably have at least a half a dozen texts that I've looked at in the last 60 seconds for people who said, hey, they were dyed-in-the-wool Bud Light drinkers too, and they're not going back. Well, I find it hard to believe that they're not going to go back. I think this is one where time heals wounds. And I think if, you know, from the perspective of Bud Light, if they just, again, move their marketing away from this particular social issue, which isn't saying they have to come down on one side or the other, move it away, focus on some of the traditional stuff, recognize who their base is, and then go back. I think that they're going to get a lot of those people back. The same thing, Target, I guess I look at it and I think that maybe time heals all wounds. You know, this is, you know, June is, of course, you know, Gay Pride Month. So this issue is going to be out there for all of June. But, you know, at the end of June, presumably a lot of this stuff, which is just like you bring the Christmas stuff in, you know, after the Christmas season, just like you bring the Halloween stuff in after the Halloween season. And I'm not, don't get me wrong. I'm not likening, the Pride Month to Halloween. I'm just saying this is a special thing built around the Pride Month. And I'm not saying that they should discontinue the merchandise and stuff, but it's not going to be featured as prominently at other parts of the year. So I think some of this stuff will probably die down. And from the perspective of Target, if you're a Target shopper, my guess is, regardless of how you feel about this issue, you're going to go back and you're going to continue to patronize Target. Could be wrong, but I think this is more of a short-term thing than a long-term thing. Jeff, my parents owned a restaurant a long time ago, and I worked with them. Even back then, my parents always reminded me not to talk about politics and or religion. I'm a successful salesman. I've always adhered to this advice because the truth is that you will always alienate someone. Jeff, I think Bud Light did not know their market and made a big blunder. They did not apologize and did not fire those responsible. That's not true. I think the advertising executive who ended up making the decision, she's been put on a leave of absence. This is it's a major league deal, and I understand it's a tempest, but we'll mark the tape. We'll mark the tape because my guess is 3 or 4 months from now, this dispute will have largely blown over. My guess is that Target's year-to-year sales are going to be back where they were, because if people like to shop at Target, they're still going to be attracted and go to Target. Similarly, it's a little bit different with beer preferences, because if you stop drinking Bud Light and maybe you switch over to Coors Light or you switch over to Miller Light or something or one of the other light beers, you might go in there and you might say, yeah, I kind of like this. So maybe there's not as much of a desire to go back. But I largely believe a lot of this will blow over. So if I were giving advice on Budweiser or Target as to how to just get this past them, my advice would be, you know, time has a way of healing all sorts of things, and I think that's going to happen here. And we'll check back, look at the stock price, look at the sales a few months from now, and see if I'm right or wrong. Back with lots more. We've got a great 2 o'clock hour coming up, including it's the newest trend for people in their homes. I just flat out do not get it. I will explain. We will discuss. That's coming up right after the top of the hour news.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome back to the show. Like I've been saying, we now live stream the program as well. You can go to WTMJ.com and just click on the watch live button as well as the listen live button. And one of the things we can do is every Friday, Pop Culture Corner, which comes along at 2:30, sponsored by Palermo's Pizza. And the cool thing we give away is this great Palermo's Pizza cutter. And there, I'm showing it up. That's what it is. The only way you can get this, as near as I can tell, the only way that you can get this is by, I don't know, knowing somebody at Palermo's or winning it through Pop Culture Corner, because I can't even get one of these things. I have to, this is the one that we have upstairs, and I get to borrow it, but I don't even get to take it home. How is that fair? But somebody is going to get this as well as the rest of our Palermo's prize package coming up after the bottom of the hour. A number of people are continuing to text me, so I feel I've actually... I have performed a public service this afternoon because if you follow me on Twitter, it's at JeffWagner620. I've got a link to the new listing, which is out by the Wisconsin Department of Revenue for unclaimed property. So if you have, I don't know, a tax refund that you haven't picked up or something like that, there is just a ton of money that is out there. And there's all these people who maybe you moved and they couldn't reach you or, you know, whatever. But there's $600 million being held for people. And the easiest way to do it is they've got this like locator. You go there, you put in your name and information, and you can find out whether or not, you know, you might be the winner. Just had somebody text me say that they went to the site and found that they had three. Not one, not two, but three separate claims. So, all right, they're a little bit wealthier because they listened to the Wagner program this afternoon. That's what we try to do a public service. Okay, before Pop Culture Corner, I have two topics that I want to discuss with you. So we're going to do this briefly. Yesterday, one of the stories that was out there is that Joe Biden, who is 80 years old, if he is reelected, he will be 82 at the time he takes office. I have made this argument that I want younger candidates. I don't care what your politics are. We should be able to find whippersnappers in their 60s who can run for president. So Joe Biden, who is clearly slowing down, and I don't care where you are in the political spectrum, he's 80 years old, and he might be in great shape for an 80-year-old, but he's 80 years old. And the idea that if he was reelected and he would be 86 if he completed his term, I think that should be scary to a lot of people. I mean, he might be great for an 80-year-old, but he's slowing down. That is just the reality. Human beings, you know, we don't age like fine wine. So anyhow, Joe Biden's giving a speech at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, gets done with his speech. He goes to walk out, and you've probably seen this because the thing's gone viral, and he trips and he goes down hard. I mean, just he said he tripped over a sandbag or something, but he goes down hard. And if you watch this, it wasn't so much like the going down hard. It was like, okay, people are rushing to help him get up. This is the third public fall that he has had since the beginning of the year. Now, thankfully, he wasn't injured. When I saw him first go down, I'm thinking, oh, you know, President Kamala Harris, give me a break. That's what I first thought. But, you know, he tripped and he fell. If you will remember, I believe it was the last year of the Trump administration, Trump was getting off an airplane. I think it was Air Force One, and it was raining and it was slippery, and he's holding on to the handrails and he's going down really, really slowly because, well, you don't want to trip and fall. And that became this object of all sorts of, you know, people were making fun of it. Look how slow he's going down this, etc. But he didn't fall, you know, on his keister. Biden does. So he trips and falls on his stage. Now, it's interesting to me because you've got a lot of the mainstream media, which is nothing to see here. It just happened. It can happen to anybody. And it does. Now, of course, this is the same mainstream media that just mercilessly ridiculed Donald Trump when he slips a little bit as he's coming down wet stairs when he is the president. Our number is 855-616-1620. That is the Old National Bank talk and text line. All right, here is my question. Biden trips and falls, third public fall, like I say, this year, not injured. It can clearly happen to anybody. All right, is this a story or is this just, Well, you know, it's just, it can happen to anybody. People trip and fall all the time. Is there any weight to be given to this? 855-616-1620. We discuss in just a moment. Hey, we have another winner. One of our texters says, thanks for the access to the Department of Revenue site. It's not much, but I got $125 back. Thanks again. Absolutely. Yeah, if you're just tuning in, the State Department of Revenue is out with their new unclaimed property list, $600 million sitting around. And it's like tax refunds, for example, that maybe you moved and you haven't claimed, et cetera. So it's really easy. There's a searchable database that you can go in, you can put in your name, and then it'll show whether or not you've got money coming back. So, I don't, but a number of our listeners are checking this out. It's run through the Department of Revenue. If you want the easiest way to get to it, just follow me on Twitter. It's at JeffWagner620. I've got a link to a story that Fox 6 did that's got a link to that. But you just put in your name and, hey, $125. It's $125 more than you started this show with. Gotta love it. Okay, 855-616-1620. We're only going to do this for a minute because then I want to switch to something else. But Joe Biden takes a hard fall yesterday on the stage at the Air Force Academy. He tripped over a sandbag. He went down hard. Not necessarily a good look. The question is, does this mean anything? Is there anything that you, draw from this? You know, one of our texters says, remember when President Ford took a fall down the stairs of Air Force One? It was a staple of Saturday Night Live forever. I'm sure this last presidential trip will be the same. I kind of doubt that. Yeah, the interesting thing was, if you're old enough to remember, and Gerald Ford, and this is how the media creates things. Gerald Ford, who, by the way, you know, took over. He was the vice president after Spiro Agnew was forced to resign, and then he became the president when Richard Nixon resigned, ran for re-election, lost to Jimmy Carter, who was a one-term president before Ronald Reagan. But the mainstream media was just brutal on Gerald Ford because they had a couple like slips and stuff. Gerald Ford was an All-American football player at Michigan. Gerald Ford was arguably one of the best athletes to ever be in the Oval Office, but he got mocked as being uncoordinated and things like that. I doubt we're going to see too much of the Biden fall on Saturday night on Saturday Night Live. I think it's just one of these things that's I think it's one of these things that's going to be swept under the rug. One of our texters says it can happen to anyone. Yeah, it can. I guess, see, here is my take on this. And I've argued this before. I hope that when people are going to cast their votes in a year from November, I want to see different choices. I firmly believe, regardless of what your politics are, I believe that Joe Biden is too old to be the president of the United States. I do. Donald Trump, and I'm not a Trumper. Trump is 78 years old, would be 78. I think that that's too old. I think you need younger people. When I saw the president go down like that, my first concern was he seriously hurt himself. And look, and I understand, you know, you can seriously hurt yourself in a fall when you're like 25 or you're 30 years old. But the truth of the matter is when you're 80 years old and you take a hard fall like that, the chances of you seriously injuring yourself are just much, much greater. And in all honesty, when he went down, that's all I was thinking about. Oh, my gosh, if something's he's really hurt himself, you got Kamala Harris, for goodness sakes, who's going to take over. That was, I think, the reaction. It was a reminder. And again, I understand that people can fall all the time, but it was a reminder of, I think, the consequences that happen when you have elected officials who are clearly hanging on past what I would argue would be their sell-by date. This, I've got a topic worked up. Maybe we'll do it next week, maybe not, on Dianne Feinstein, who's come back to the Senate, and she's just – everybody, I think, acknowledges that she's not capable of doing this job anymore. You know, she's had a distinguished career, but she's hanging on. She's in a wheelchair. She's protected by aides who apparently are – she has trouble tracking stuff, so she's got all the aides that are reminding her of things. And you have this happen with Republicans as well. So this really isn't a it's not a partisan sort of thing. It's you have these people who hang on well past when they should. And I hope – I just – hope that, you know, people realize this. And candidly, I mean, Joe Biden, I frankly always wonder what it is. Is it the ego? Is it the power? What is it that makes you be unable to walk away and say, hey, I've had a really distinguished career. I've been a senator and I've been the vice president. I've been the president. And now I'm 81 years old, or I'll be 82 years old. And I don't know how much time I have left, but maybe I want to enjoy the rest of the time I have without worrying about being the leader of the free world. It's always interesting to me, and again, in a nonpartisan fashion, the ego that some of these people have that think that I'm the only one who can end up doing it. But, you know, watching him take that hard fall yesterday reminded me, at least my takeaway was, glad he got up. But, you know, we need to have younger people, period. All right. I promised you this story, and it's the latest trend that I do not get. And if you're watching us, this is today's Wall Street Journal. See, this demonstrates that we really are doing this live. This is this morning's Wall Street Journal. For years and years, people at their homes have been putting in hot tubs and things like that, or saunas, perhaps. You know, it's not when after my treat to myself when I go to, you know, the place where I work out is, okay, I'm going to sit in the sauna for 5 or 10 minutes. I just enjoy that. I like the heat. I like the hot tubs. People love hot tubs. The latest thing, they call it the cold rush. The cold rush. Homeowners and luxury developers are racing to install ice baths as part of a trend to enhance home wellness spaces. There is, for example, a company called Blue Cube, and for $19,000, they will make a cold plunge pool. They start at $19,000, they can go up to like $30,000. What these are is they're exactly what they sound. They're like small bathtubs. They have them outside. And what you do is you lower the temperature of the water to somewhere below 59 degrees, most commonly like 45 or 50 degrees, really, really cold, like an ice bath. And then people jump in them and they stay in them for as long as they possibly can. Generally speaking, only kind of like a minute or two. And then it's supposed to be reinvigorating and things like this. But this is the latest amenity. They call them cold plunges that people are putting into their homes. Our number is 855-616-1620, and we've only got a couple minutes. See, there's some things that I understand intellectually, but I wouldn't do myself. Then there's stuff like this. The idea of spending, you know, $20,000 or $30,000, or in some cases a lot more, to put in what is essentially a cold bathtub so I could jump in to freezing water for a few minutes. I just don't flat get it. 855-616-1620. I mean, I guess you could take a cold shower, but I don't need a $60,000 ice bath. Do you understand that? Do you get it? 855-616-1620. Couple calls when we come back.
You're as cold.
The average cold plunge costs, you can spend, at least in the luxury place, up to $45,000. I mean, $45,000. I mean, I guess I got a bathtub. If I really want to do it, go out, buy a bag of ice and dump it in there and stuff. $45,000. But this is the latest trend. And by the way, a number of people are texting me saying, well, this is a recovery thing for like high-end world-class athletes. And I understand that. But just for average people, do you want to jump into freezing water after you've, I don't know, done a workout? Jeremy in Bayview. Jeremy, you're on WTMJ. Hello.
Hey, Jeff. How's it going?
Good. What do you think? You've done this.
I went on a vacation to Asheville, and they have about 15 of these wellness spas where you kind of sit in the hot sauna for 15 minutes, you jump in a cold plunge for 3 minutes, and then you kind of sit socialize on like a hot bench in almost like a Roman bathhouse. And okay. I was shocked to see one of them, but there's like 15 of them. It was amazing. And I'll say I had a few beers the night before and I woke up not feeling 100%. And it was like game changing. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what is this? And so no, when I put one in my house, no, I do have like one of those whirlpool.
Right.
You can just fill it up with cold water. I've done it in my own house before.
Right.
After a workout, but I definitely wouldn't probably invest in one, but I would open a business with this in there. Cause I think it is a pretty interesting trend, and there was a lot of members.
Well, interesting, Jeremy. Thanks. Now, I have a texter. One of our texters says, Jeff, do you remember the old Vic Tanny? It was a health club, Port Washington Road and Bradley Road back in the 80s. I do, and North Shore. They had this thing called the cold dip, post-workout, freezing cold water that you would jump in. I used it before the polar bear plunge to train. Someone had a heart attack in it, and they took it out. Well, I mean, that can happen, you know, all over. One of our texters is correctly pointing out, Jeff, this brings to mind one of your sayings that this could be, if you got $45,000 to put in a cold plunge, it may be God's way of telling you that you've got too much money. Okay, but again, if that's how you choose to spend your dough, it is out there.
Gather round, all. It's time for Wagner's Pop Culture Corner. Time to put aside the heavy lifting and have a good time at the old National Bank Talkin' text line at 855-616-1620. Old National Bank, get old. Now, here's Jeff Wagner.
And Pop Culture Corner every week is brought to you by our friends at Palermo's Pizza. Great Wisconsin-based company. One caller, and at some point in time we might expand the text, but right now it's callers in the exclusive discretion of my producer Charlie, wins our Palermo's Pizza prize package, which is a coupon good for a couple frozen pizzas. And if you are live streaming us, this very, very coveted Palermo's pizza cutter that I'm holding in my hand that I don't even get a copy of. I just get to use one occasionally as we keep this one at the office and for display purposes and a bunch of other stuff as well. So that's exclusively in the discretion of my producer, Charlie. Okay, if you are new to this program, what we do at the end of the week, and I've been doing this in one variation or another since I started this program on WTMJ 25 years ago, is we just kind of take a deep breath. I understand there's lots of significant and challenging stuff that's going on in the world. And we talk about that a lot. But we do this segment to have a little bit of fun. And I am a creature of pop culture. And sometimes we talk about movies and sometimes music. And I'm working up one on books. I'm trying to figure out a way to do a book one. Sometimes it's travel. Sometimes it's food. Typically, it's something that happened during the week that triggers something for me that I think is interesting. And hopefully you will find it interesting as well. So what happened this week? Ted Lasso, which was a very, very, I don't know if I want to say groundbreaking, but it was an interesting show that many of you have perhaps not seen because it's on Apple TV. If you don't have the Apple TV streaming service, you have not seen Ted Lasso. But it's 3 years, and they just had what they believe is the series finale. There might be spinoffs and stuff, but it was designed as we're going to run this for 3 seasons. They ran it, and the final episode aired earlier this week. Now, I said this earlier. The first season of Ted Lasso I thought was great. The second season I thought was okay. The third season I thought, well, I'm glad they're only going to have 3 seasons. I mean, I think, and I've made this argument a lot about you know, TV shows, whether they're on streaming services or whether they're, you know, over the air. I think a lot of times these TV shows go on too long and they end up recycling plots and things like that. And so I've always liked this idea where you have these creators who say, look, we don't care how much money is involved here. We have a window. We have a story we want to tell. We think we need to tell the story in 3 seasons or 5 seasons or whatever it is. And then regardless of whether or not we could continue, you know, we're done with this story. So we're going to wrap it up. We're not going to just kind of hang around simply because we might be able to hang around. We want to go out on top. So anyhow, while I think the third season of Ted Lasso, in my opinion, was nowhere as near as good as the first two, particularly the first one, I will say this. Without going into any detail at all, because maybe there's a lot of people who haven't seen it, I think they stuck the landing. I think the wrap up episode, if it is the series finale, and I believe it's going to be, I think they nailed it. You know, it was the gymnast, and they're going off the high bar or whatever, and I think they landed it. I would give it, if not a 10, I would give it a 9.9. I think they stuck the landing. I want to talk about other TV shows that stuck the landing. Our number is 855-616-1620, which is the old National Bank talk and text line. All right, for Pop Culture Corner this week, a TV series that went out where the series finale got it right. There's all sorts of ones we can say they got it wrong. Seinfeld series finale. What's the word I'm looking for? It sucked. It did. I would argue The Sopranos, which was a really good, revolutionary, groundbreaking show that I think stayed way too long. I think if you watch the plots from season 5, you're going to see that they were the same plots, just different people that they had in season 2. And the finale, I think, was awful. But let's talk about a TV series that nailed it. And it could be streaming, it could be over the air. TV series that stuck the landing and got it right. 855-616-1620. Pop Culture Corner, once again brought to you by Palermo's Pizza. Back with your calls and texts in just a moment.
It's Pop Culture Time. Now back to take your calls. Here's Jeff Wagner.
Stuck the landing, a gymnastics phrase. TV shows whose finale stuck the landing. Just, they absolutely nailed it. We think of the ones that were kind of like so-so, but there's also great ones as well. 855-616-1620. Let's start with Steve in Fox Point. Hi, Steve. You're on WTMJ.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
For me, it's got to be Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. Walter White going out on his own terms after being in the wind for a little bit with right. My Katie Blue playing in the background is just a perfect ending to a perfect show.
It is. And, you know, that's one where they could have stretched that story out for another couple seasons. It was popular. They were making money. But they said, okay, this is the story that we're going to tell, and it's going to take us X number of episodes to do it, and boom, we're done, and we're going to end on a high point, at least a high point by meaning, you know, at least as far as the storytelling and stuff. No, I think it was a great one. Yeah, thanks for
definitely a masterpiece.
Right, no, thanks for calling. Absolutely, you know the, and then, you know, then you did the sequel, Better Call Saul, which I think. I liked the ending, but I didn't like the last season. I didn't like how they got there. It seemed to me they were just kind of killing time for a while. But, I mean, I liked the way it ultimately ended. 855-616-1620. Let's talk to, Jim in Hartford. Jim, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Okay.
A beautiful day again.
It is. Okay, they stuck the landing. Best TV ending for a TV series.
Okay, it's kind of a toss-up. It's between MASH and Happy Days.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for calling, Jim. I'm trying to remember the Happy Days ending. Happy Days was another TV show that I think went on way too long. MASH, which at the time, the finale of MASH, whenever that ran in 82, 83, whenever that was, and maybe it remains to this day, outside of like Super Bowls, it was the most watched TV show ever because it again, this is before you had streaming and you had much larger audiences. I'm conflicted on the MASH last episode because if you will remember, it was this, you know, couple hour long thing. The first hour had the Alan Alda Hawkeye character going crazy and ending up in a psych ward and then mysteriously being cured. And then the second half of it had the typical goodbyes. I think the second half was outstanding. I thought the first half, not as much so. 855-616-1620. Jeff, I've been binging Succession this week. Succession was, of course, the HBO show that just wrapped up in the last week or so. Number of people love the ending of that. I don't have a position because I only watched the first year of that, and I do intend to watch seasons 2, 3, and 4. So I haven't seen the ending of that, so I don't have that. Number of people are mentioning MASH. Again, I see MASH as two-pronged. I see it as the first half, which I didn't think was very good, and the second half was just absolutely outstanding. Let's talk to John in Manitowoc. John, you're on WTMJ.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Okay, best TV show ending of all time.
I think it's got to be the Bob Newhart show, and I know the Bob Newhart show went from Bob Newhart and then to Newhart, but
right.
When they ended the second time and he wakes up in bed with Emily and doesn't know where he is to start with was just a a spot on. They landed it with that one, no doubt.
You never saw it coming, right? No, thanks. Absolutely. And I think When I'm listing my top two or three endings of all time, that's clearly one. For people who might not be familiar with this, back in the 70s, Bob Newhart had a show. It was the Bob Newhart Show, where he played a psychiatrist in Chicago, and Suzanne Pleshette was his wife, Emily. So, all right, that show ends after 6 or 7 years or whatever, and then a couple of years later, he comes back, and it's Newhart, where he plays an owner of an inn in like New Hampshire or somewhere on the East Coast and stuff. And so that show runs for several years. The conclusion is the last scene is he's in bed and he wakes up and the Suzanne Pleshette character, his wife Emily from the first series, she's in bed with him and he's like, gosh, I just had the strangest dream. I owned an inn in Connecticut or New Hampshire, wherever it was. And it just nobody saw it coming at all. It was just an absolutely great one. 855-616-1620. Let's talk to Steve in Glendale. Steve, you're on WTMJ.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Which one is yours?
Definitely the last episode, which was in two parts, The Fugitive, The Judgment, part one and two, where Richard Kimball was finally cleared of his wife's murder.
He catches the one-armed man.
Exactly. And that particular episode had the highest viewership until the Who Shot JR episode of Dallas.
Right. No, it's just tremendous. You're going back a ways, but yes, just absolutely tremendous. Now, here's another one. One of our listeners, Jeff, says, St. Elsewhere. I loved St. Elsewhere. It was set in this kind of Chicago hospital, I'm pretty sure. Boston hospital, you know, it was kind of like I thought it was just a great show on all these different levels. That and Hill Street Blues growing up are two of my very, very favorite shows. And it turns out the end that the whole show is the creation of this like autistic kid. It was weird, but it was fascinating at the same time. Let's talk to Dennis on the South Side. Dennis, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Thanks for taking my call, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
I would have to say, for a variety of reasons, JAG would be the one that sticks out in my mind. I love the ending where they flip the coin and you don't know who wins the bet. You know, who's going to stay in the military and who's going to drop out so they could be married. But what was really fascinating to me about that whole thing is how it spawned other programs, how, you know, out of JAG came NCIS, and out of NCIS came NCIS New Orleans and Los Angeles.
Right.
What was even funnier to me was how the characters of JAG played their roles in a number of those spinoffs
in
different episodes.
Yeah, they never went away. Yeah. Dennis, obviously you have touched a nerve with my producer. You are the winner of our Palermo's Pizza prize package for the day, including the coveted Palermo's Pizza Cutter.
Much.
So thanks for participating. I appreciate it.
On behalf of the callers, I wish to take this from you gratefully.
Thank you. Well, I can't get one of these. I've been hinting at this for a couple years now I'm not getting one. The only way I can get it is to call in and convince Charlie to take my call, and hopefully he'll like it. A lot of different great ones. 6 Feet Under, which was an HBO show. Yeah, that was a very, very good ending. Family Ties. Yep, that was a good one. Cheers. Yeah, the problem with Cheers is I think it just stayed around too long. I kind of lost interest in that. I will tell you this. One of the ones that's my all-time favorite, and it's, I'm not sure how many people have seen it, but the Shield, which was it was on one of the, I think it was on FX, and it's a tough watch because it's about, you know, these crooked cops and stuff. But without giving anything away, if you haven't seen The Shield, I think it's a perfect ending where people end up kind of getting their just desserts. Jeff, for me, it was the X-Files. The ending was one that nobody could have seen coming. Yeah, I think that was good. A couple people are mentioning the Mary Tyler Moore Show. HBO is, or Max is what they're calling it now, if you stream it, is running a thing on Mary Tyler Moore. And it is true, the ending of the Mary Tyler Moore Show was just absolutely great, where they all, everybody but the Ted Baxter character, the played by Ted Knight, everybody gets fired and they all kind of like walk out together singing It's a Long Way to Tipperary. Very, very good. Number of people remember St. Elsewhere. I cried during the St. Elsewhere one. I get it. Yeah, I think a lot of people did. Number of people are mentioning the Friends episode. I wasn't a fan of Friends, so I'm sure I've seen it, but I'm not, it's just kind of not registering on that. A lot of people mentioning Bob Newhart as well. Bottom line is, okay, somebody says MASH really stuck the landing. I think that's it. Home Improvement. Yep. Home Improvement's definitely one. A lot of people with MASH. Queen's Gambit was awesome. A lot of people haven't seen that, but it's well worth seeing. That's the thing. It's just, and I will tell you this, one of the other ones that I would put up there is the FX show Justified, which ran for 6 seasons, and they ended it just like Breaking Bad. They ended it at the right time. They're bringing back Justified in July. It's a limited run series, the same character, but 15 years later in a different kind of setting. And candidly, I can't wait. I think it's going to be really, really good. NYPD Blue, yes, that would definitely be one as well. And so bottom line is, it's tough to get a TV show on the air. It's tough to tell the story. Breaking Bad, I think, like our first caller said, was absolutely outstanding. But to me, The Shield would be great, and also Newhart. Great, great ending. However the show's ended, hope you enjoy your favorite series.